KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim in today for Michael Krasny. Black babies in the U.S. are 2 times more likely to die in their first year of life than white babies. And in some California cities, the statistics are even more startling. In Los Angeles, black infants are 3 times more likely to die before their first birthday than white infants. And in San Francisco, black babies die at a rate of nearly 10 per 1,000 compared to white babies of 2 per 1,000 deaths. Researchers have focused on the effects of poverty, education levels, and healthcare access over the years to explain the persistent gap, but more are realizing that stress and other issues caused by racism is a major factor. And we're joined this half hour by two people who have been looking at this issue closely. Prisca Neely is senior reporter for KPCC. She covers early childhood. Good morning, Prisca Neely.
Hi, Mina. Nice to be here.
Glad you're here as well. And Dr. Brittany Chambers, she's an assistant professor of epidemiology and biostatistics and a California Preterm Birth Initiative researcher at UCSF. Good morning to you, Brittany Chambers.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Prisca Neely, I'll start with you. What are these babies dying from most often?
Well, the leading cause is prematurity, babies who are born too early and therefore too small. There are a lot of factors that go into this, but what we're seeing is that, and this, you know, it's important to say that this is not at all a new phenomenon. These preterm, these low birth weight issues have been around with us for decades. But what, you know, what the research is really starting to focus on is what is the experience of the mother that is leading to higher stress levels that may be causing this preterm birth.
Because we have gotten better at keeping premature small infants alive generally, right, Brittany Chambers?
Yeah, we have. But what we continue to see is that black women are at higher risk for having infants premature of low birth weight and actually having to bury a child before the first year of age. So that disparity hasn't changed.
And so when we say that we're realizing that racism, stress, and other issues associated with it could be affecting this, how exactly could it be affecting this, Brittany Chambers?
So what we know, and research consistently shows that factors such as education, smoking during pregnancy, and all other risk factors such as hypertension that we know impact preterm birth, that they only explain about 10% of variation that we see in these disparities, and that racism is the dominant factor and not race. And so what researchers are hypothesizing is that exposure to chronic stress such as racism across the lifespan signals biological factors that causes wear and tear on women's bodies across the lifespan that causes them to have poorer health outcomes in response to this stress.
And what are some of the specific sort of physiological effects of the stress?
So we're still figuring that out, in particular among black women. So what research shows is that black women consistently have high cortisol levels across the lifespan. This is not the same when we look at white women. We can see response to stressors that cortisol levels changes. In a study that we're currently leading with the Preterm Birth Initiative, it's called the SOLARS Project, we're partnering with communities in Oakland where we'll be collecting biomarkers to measure cortisol in black and Latina women across their pregnancies and during the postpartum periods to better understand this stress cascade.
So Prisca Neely, what I'm hearing is that, yes, while things like diet, smoking, drinking, weight, various other sort of individual behaviors mm-hmm. can be contributing to this, which there was a lot of focus on, I think, over the decades while this gap in infant mortality rates persisted, that they're finding that it's actually a relatively small portion of what's causing this among black women in terms of high infant mortality.
Right. And, you know, another statistic that we have that's really shocking to a lot of people is that a black woman with a college degree is more likely to lose her baby than a white woman with a high school diploma. And, you know, facts like that are things that we've known for decades. I found a 1984 hearing you know, congressional hearing, and researchers and public health officials from all over the country were flying in for this, and it was called Infant Mortality Rates: Failure to Close the Black-White Gap. So this conversation was going on in 1984, and the Assistant Secretary of Human Health and Services at the time really said, "I'm not convinced that we can reduce the black rate to the white rate with the current state of our knowledge, because I don't know what the rest of the problem is." So there was really just kind of a feeling of being overwhelmed at the time. And now we're starting to understand that the cause is something that's really hard to talk about, and it's racism and many inequities that are, it's a complicated issue that's affecting babies.
What changed? If this was sort of known, actually, that also racism could be a contributing factor, what changed so that it's become more of an area of focus by researchers?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's that fact that over and over they were trying to, you know, I'm reading this hearing and there are a lot of congressmen who are asking, you know, is it genetics? You know, is it education? Is it smoking? And, you know, they had to say over and over again, no, no, no. So over the decades, they kept seeing, you know, those results with different studies. And now we have this research, like the research that's coming out of UCSF, that is really pointing to these other stressors, because for a while, you know, the policy was focused on kind of blaming individual behavior. And we know that that's not the root of the cause.
The other point that your reporting has brought out, besides the fact that it's college educated black women who are also experiencing very significant infant mortality compared to white women with much lower educational attainment, is the reporting you've done around African immigrants who come here. Can you describe that?
Yes. So, you know, that was one of the things that people wanted to look to as an explanation. Are black women somehow, you know, just kind of predisposed to have these issues? And so there have been studies, and these studies were done a while ago in the 90s, and they just have been kind of verified over the years. But looking at African immigrants who come to the United States to have babies, and their results, their birth outcomes are more similar to white women. And so that was one way. And, you know, there have been many studies over the years that have shown that it's not just a genetic issue. It's not just the biological issue. It's something about the lived experience, that life course approach, the experience of being a black woman in America that is having this effect.
And the children of these African immigrants actually
right.
do worse. So the ones who grow up in the U.S.
Right.
start to have the same issues and infant
more
mortality.
Evidence that it's about the experience. It's about living here. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to invite our listeners to join this conversation. We're talking about the persistently high black infant mortality rate in this country, where black babies are two times as likely to die before their first birthday than white babies, and how researchers are focusing more on the role of racism in this for a whole host of reasons that we're digging into in this half hour. What are your questions about this alarmingly persistent reality for black babies and moms? Do you have any personal experiences or insights to share? You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. We're joined by Priska Neely. She's a senior reporter who covers early childhood for KPCC, and Brittany Chambers, who's an assistant professor of epidemiology and biostatistics and a California Preterm Birth Initiative researcher at UCSF. Brittany Chambers, a lot of different groups experience racism in this country. Is your research also looking at the effects of racism on Latina women, on Asian women?
Yeah, so as a black woman, my research primarily focuses on experiences of racism among black women, and partner with researchers in Fresno to do a deeper dive in how racism is impacting Latina women in their health outcomes. But just to give you like a little highlight of the work that we've been doing at the Preterm Birth Initiative, one of our recent articles that was published. So racism, structural racism in particular, understanding it as a system that distributes unequal resources to groups of people to advantage one social group over another, we found that Black women in California are more likely to live in highly racially and economically segregated communities. And what we see is that living in these segregated communities explains more variation in the Black to white disparity that we see in adverse birth outcomes. And then when centering in on Black women, so just analysis focused on Black women who live in highly segregated communities, they're about 68% more likely to experience an infant death compared to Black women who live in more privileged areas.
Have you also looked at the maternal death rate among Black women, which is also quite high relative to other groups in this country?
Yeah, the maternal rate is really, really high. I, in particular, have not did a deeper dive in that research yet.
Well, we are getting calls and questions from our audience. And before I get to them, I just wanted to ask you, Prisca Neely, if you too have had any personal experiences around this. I understand that this topic is also of interest to you because it affects you personally.
Yeah, it's something that's touched my family. And, you know, I am a Black woman. I did not know. I think awareness around this issue is just so low, even in the Black community. This is something that I didn't know about until last year when I started covering early childhood issues. And I just happened to be at a conference where it came up. And when I heard the statistics and I heard that it's, you know, across socioeconomic levels and that it's premature babies, I realized, oh, my God, this is my sister's. Like, my older sister lost two babies who were born very premature about 20 years ago. And my other sister had my nephew, who's now 11. He's doing really well. But she had him 2 months premature. And neither of them knew about this before I started reporting on it. I interviewed them as part of my project. But neither of them knew about it. And my sister Nicole said something that really stuck with me, which is that I don't think we realize that this is an issue beyond our bodies. And that was something that over and over again, as I talked to moms who lost their children, you know, they didn't know about this. They didn't realize that they were at higher risk. Most of them had never been talked about this by their doctors. So awareness is just really key.
Yes. Do you want to say a little bit more about the hospital experience or just engaging with doctors generally, Brittany Chambers, that a lot of African-American women have talked about as being part of how the stress of racism manifests?
Right. So research also shows that regardless of access to prenatal care, that women, Black women still continue to have these disparities. So research also by the Preterm Birth Initiative, what we find is that among Black women in Oakland, about 25% of women report experiencing racial discrimination across the lifespan getting medical care. And then when you put in the factor of structural racism, so we find that Black women who live in highly segregated communities, that they report higher rates of racial discrimination across situational domains, including 45% of women saying that they received racial discrimination while getting medical care.
And what are some examples of this? How does it play out?
So the way that women say that this plays out, so this is also data from a qualitative study that I've just conducted a few months ago with Black women. And Black women, they say that when they're receiving care, that doctors aren't respectful, that they don't acknowledge them as a person, that they have questions and providers kind of oversee their questions or tell them that, oh, that's not a worry. Women who are Black and of low income also reported receiving fragmented care. So being on Medi-Cal, having to go to one building that's on one side of town to get medical care and then go all the way across town to get an ultrasound, and these two entities not communicating with one another. And then also reporting things such as really getting into personal things like prejudging women, thinking that, oh, they're smoking, or, oh, their child's father isn't around. Those are things that women express as forms of discrimination experienced within the medical setting.
And Prisca Neely, do you want to add anything to that in terms of anecdotes that you've heard?
That's something that I heard from a lot of the moms that I talked to, including one woman I profiled who is now really an activist and an advocate around these issues. But she had a very similar experience where she, you know, she was complaining about spotting and pain throughout the course of her pregnancy. And the doctor was just like, oh, no, don't worry about it. And she said that she, you know, never saw the same doctor. She wouldn't see the doctor for more than 5 minutes at a time. And she ended up going into labor at 6 months and her baby died soon after being born. And, you know, now she talks about this all the time. I mean, in terms of awareness, these are really painful and traumatic things to talk about. So it's kind of understandable as to why there is a lower level of awareness around this. But this woman, Raina Granberry, now works for an organization that really tries to raise awareness around this. And she wants to share her story. And when she talked about it in her own family, more anecdotes started coming out of like, oh, I lost a baby. It was just something that had never been discussed.
Well, Monica asks, can Dr. Chambers discuss the potential solutions to these problems, specifically paid family leave, doulas in the prenatal and postpartum period, diversification of the workforce, and changing healthcare?
Yeah, so there is a lot of work that's going on around these issues in the Bay Area. So there's the Roots of Labor Collective, which is a doula group in the Oakland Bay Area that is all women of color. So includes Black women, Latina women, Asian women, and they do provide doula services as for women who can afford it versus women who cannot afford it. So being an advocate for women, making sure that they have the prenatal care experiences that they want and desire, as well as the postpartum care. But last week, through a collaboratory with the Preterm Birth Initiative, my team and I, we started a movement where we need to listen to Black women. And so Black women are telling these stories. They're telling us what they need. They're telling us solutions. But we as researchers, we don't always bring them into the research process. So one thing that I would like to challenge people to do is to bring those people along who you're studying because they know the solutions.
Hmm. Washington and Pleasanton, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so this is a very timely topic because I work in the biotech space, and I know for a fact that at the research and development level, especially for medical devices and drugs, very few of the test subjects are African-Americans or minorities. So I really think that this issue starts even way before the hospital, and it starts at the R&D level where the people developing the drugs, developing the medical devices, you know, do not reach out to test subjects that are outside their normal, scope of friends or colleagues. So I think that the part of the solution is involving African Americans, Latinos, Asians in the R&D phase of medical care.
Washington,
and that's my comment.
Yes, Washington, thank you, and underscoring Brittany Chambers' point. Dana in Los Gatos. Hi, Dana.
Hi. I'm so grateful this research is being done. And, we just have to move beyond blaming women of color and all women for, negative outcomes, and especially outcomes in child mortality. And I'm wondering if other research has been done. So many women, all women face discrimination, and especially women in the workforce and in the workforce that's dominated by men. Has any of that, any research been done to see what cortisol effect has on infant mortality for that?
Brittany Chambers, do you know if there has been much research on that for other groups,
other women? I cannot...
Speak to that specific question.
Priska
Neely, yeah. I mean, I think what the main point of this is that there is something very specific to the experience of being a Black woman in this country that is particularly stressful, particularly significant and distinct. Am I right that that's what they're realizing?
Yeah, this isn't something that I can speak about in depth, but I wanted to mention something that researchers call the Latina paradox, which is looking at Latina women who, you know, some of them who have a kind of a similar experience in terms of facing stress and racism, but don't have the same birth outcomes. And I guess the concern is yet, You know, they don't have the poor birth outcomes yet. I can't speak about that in depth, but that is one of the differences that we see. But in terms of solutions, you know, we talked a little bit about the life course approach, and that's something that's really informed some work that's actually going on in the Oakland area. In the Castlemont neighborhood there, there's something called a Best Baby Zone. It's one of 9 of these zones across the country that are looking at how can we improve everything for everyone in the whole neighborhood with a goal of long-term decreasing infant deaths. So that's something that's going on in Castlemont, and they're really looking at economic empowerment. They've started a community market where local vendors can sell, where they have family playtime spaces, where they have baby showers for new moms, and they have a boot camp for new dads. And that's something that is, like, you know, in a lot of these communities, things may be a little bit challenging for everyone. And if we can improve things for everyone, then babies will have better outcomes in the future.
Well, Marcella asks, can you discuss the biomarkers that they measure? There are studies that show, for example, the measurement of the thickness of the carotid artery in Black adolescents as an indicator of risk for CVD.
All right, so the primary risk factors that we're measuring in the SOLAR study are blood, urine, and saliva, and we're looking at cortisol across those measures. We do know that other people are looking at other biomarkers such as telomere lengths and seeing how we can better understand the pathways by which structural racism gets under Black women's skin and cause them to have a baby premature.
Well, again, this listener wants to know, this is a discussion comparing two groups. What about other minorities? I don't know if there's anything you want to add to this. It seems to be we're getting a lot of questions about this.
I did some work in Fresno. So to talk about the Latina paradox, we do know when we focus in on Latina women, particularly women who were born in Mexico or of a Mexican descent, when you separate the groups and look at those who were born in the U.S. and compare it to those who were born in Mexico, we do find that U.S.-born Latina women, they do have a similar health outcomes or birth outcomes as Black women. So I guess the question is to everyone who's interested in looking at other racial groups. There is literature that's out there, but I could particularly talk to the disparities that we see in Black women.
And I can say that here in Los Angeles, the numbers for the Latino babies and white babies are pretty similar. That three times the rate between Black and white is about the same time the rate for Latino and Black babies.
Well, let's hear next from Manisha in Fremont. Hi, Manisha.
Hey, so I come from Asia. I'm an Indian. My first son was 3 weeks preterm. So maybe this is a repeated question. Is there any data or research showing what affects the Asian woman?
Priska Neely.
From my understanding, so I'm looking at the graph here in Los Angeles again. I think that our rates are kind of similar to the national rates, but for the Asian outcomes overall, and there are some differences when you look at Pacific Islander that breakdown there. But the rates of deaths here in LA County are actually lower than the white rate. So the Asian babies are doing better. I know that Native American outcomes are very similar and sometimes worse than Black babies.
Do you have any insights into why California, some major cities in California, seem to have worse rates? Black babies being 3 times more likely to die than white babies before their first birthday in Los Angeles, or the rates that are very high in San Francisco?
Yeah, I think LA County just launched a new plan because, you know, it is very alarming that the gap here is larger than the national rate, when overall we have a, you know, in terms of infant mortality overall, the rate is lower than the national rate. And one of the things that they're concerned about, and Professor Chambers kind of talked about this earlier, is that isolation factor and the fact that in LA County, you know, the Black population has really been pushed out to kind of these more isolated areas and may not have a community. You know, a lot of, and when we talk about solutions, a lot of it really focuses on you know, kind of support groups and areas where Black women can be together and support each other and have a doula who looks like them. And that is not happening in some of these areas when it's linked to, you know, the housing crisis and all the things, you know, different factors like that.
Brittany Chambers, do you have any thoughts on this as well?
So bringing it back to structural racism, so looking at San Francisco, one wouldn't expect for a city that's so progressive to have such alarming disparities between Black and white women. But if we look at Bayview, which is a really concentrated community of Black women, that is also the community that has the highest infant mortality and maternal mortality rates. And from a theoretical view, the way in which structural racism operates. So if you put a group of people concentrated towards one area, you're going to remove resources from that area. So Bayview, you have food deserts, lack of access to like educational resources, lack of access to job opportunities, higher incarceration rates. And so those are the things when we talk about structural racism and unequal distribution of opportunity. Those are the things that drive structural racism and that really impacts these disparities we see in health outcomes.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze in Dominique from Sunnyvale. Hi, Dominique.
Hi, how are you?
I'm
the executive director at Blossom Birth Services in Palo Alto, and it was interesting that you guys are talking about community because that is one thing that we definitely focus on as for our organization. We're a nonprofit, and we focus in the pre- and postnatal time period to support families outside of just the medical care that's going on. And you're talking about the cortisol levels, being able to have support all the way around a family to help them deal with whatever is going on and to process it. And I myself, being an African-American woman, have experienced both those things. I had a cesarean section the very first time that I gave birth, and I was able to have a home birth, VBAC, actually, the second time around. But it's an interesting story around that because I was supposed to go to the hospital, and I was really terrified because of the experience that I had the first time. And I did feel that I wasn't listened to. I actually gave birth in Chicago for my first birth, but here in California. And I think just having the access to the resources that I did, I had concurrent care with both an OB and a midwife the second time around, which helped me be able to get to that point. And just having access to those resources were really helpful, but I still had a lot of trauma surrounding my first birth.
Well, Dominique, thanks for sharing that story. And what I'm hearing underscores what you were saying earlier, Brittany Chambers, about really listening to women, but then also Priska Neely, what you were saying about access to doula care, and then there's just the broader issues of stable housing and various other things that here in the Bay Area seems to be much harder to come by. This listener is just wondering quickly, Brittany Chambers, what resources she can direct families to or he can direct families to, because he'd like to bring this up at his school.
If you go to Black Women Birth and Justice, it's a website that talks about the reproductive justice movement and resources available.
Dr. Brittany Chambers of UCSF, thank you. And Priska Neely of KPCC, thanks as well for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Mina Kim in today for Michael Krasny. Another Hour Forum is next. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.